I'm Dr. Howard Zucker, the doc in Docology. It's summertime again, and if you're a parent like I am, you know the drill. The kids go out, they go to camp, they go play by the lake, the backyard, gathered around trees and everything, and then they come back inside, and you remove their clothes, get them in a bath or a shower quickly, and then there's that daily ritual, right? You check for ticks. You check behind the ears, you check in the ear, under the arms, check everywhere. And you're looking for that tiny little black dot. I mean, these dots are really small. They're the size of a poppy seed. And there's good reason. There's really good reason why we should be looking for a tick, because they're more than just a nuisance. These little ticks can carry serious diseases, even life-threatening diseases. They can bite you, give you a fever, give you fatigue. And in fact, some of these ticks can actually give you an allergy to red meat, which we're going to talk about today. And tick-borne illnesses are actually increasing in the United States, all across the country. So there's no better reason to join us today to listen to a little tick talk from our guest, who is an incredible expert, Dr. Lyle Peterson. He is the director of the vector-borne disease branch at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And he is basically one of the nation's leading experts on ticks, the diseases they cause, and what we can do to protect ourselves. He's had a four-decade career looking at infectious diseases and outbreaks, whether it's Ebola, Zika, and so many other diseases. And he's here today to share with us information about what these little critters can do, how to protect ourselves from them, and obviously what we should be doing in the future to make sure our kids, ourselves, and anyone we love are safe from getting a tick-borne illness. So Lyle, it is great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I thought what I'd do is start by just a little bit of personal history. When I was a kid, you know, I went up to the Catskills where my grandparents had a house. I went into the forest, or I'd walk around the trees, and I'd pick blueberries, eat them without even washing them, and be in the grass or rolling around. And then I'd come back in, have dinner, and go to sleep. And nobody ever checked me for a tick. Nobody checked me for anything. Just say, okay, go to sleep. Tomorrow you'll play again. What's happened? Like, what has changed that suddenly, you know, we're so worried about this and we do these daily checks?
So you're absolutely right. Many years ago, there wasn't so much of a tick problem at all. And so this explosion of ticks, particularly in the Northeast and upper Midwest by deer ticks, has become a huge, huge problem. And it's really interesting to know why that has occurred. And so kind of go back in history, back in the 1800s and early 1900s, what happened was that many areas of the U.S., particularly in the Northeast, it was basically deforested for agriculture. And so there were books written about where have all the trees gone, basically, because the whole thing was deforested for agriculture. At the same time, people hunted deer. And by the turn of the last century, around the 1900 or so, deer had basically disappeared. There was actually fear that they were going to become extinct because they were so hunted. And what happens is that the deer ticks made on deer. And so no deer, no ticks. And so basically the ticks were wiped out because of lack of habitat. The forests were cleared out and there were no deer. And subsequently, starting maybe in the 1930s, 1940s, agriculture went back or decreased. Forests came back. Nobody was hunting deer so much anymore as a primary source of food. And so the deer population basically has exploded. And with that, now the tick population exploded as well. So now we're just inundated with ticks. The same time, more and more people are living in forested areas where there's trees around, deer wandering around, and then hence lots of ticks.
So that's part of the issue, I gather. And then once you, whether it's Lyme disease, but all these other diseases will also follow as a result of the ticks. Do you think the climate has something to do with it? So now the deforestation you mentioned, you mentioned all the deer ticks there, but what about the climate with the temperature changing and you start to see diseases and bugs, mosquitoes and other things in areas that are a lot colder than they were, or warmer now, but areas that were colder in the past?
Yeah, so temperature is really important. And so basically once it's warmer, warmer temperatures do a couple of things with ticks. One is that they can better survive the winter if the winter is not so cold. The other thing is that when it's warmer, they come out basically and start hunting for food. So with warmer temperatures, the ticks are simply out longer and they survive longer. And they're the period of which we call questing, or which is the time when the ticks are actually looking for a blood meal, waiting for you to walk by so they can grab onto you. That time increases. This is really important, the temperature. And what we've seen is that the march of where these ticks are has just gone further and further north as the winters are not quite as cold and the growing season is longer.
I do want to hear, you mentioned a little bit about the ticks. What is the life cycle of these ticks? I mean, it's a period, as I understood, it's a 2-year period that they have to go through. And then there's certain periods like the nymph phase where they're most likely to be a problem. But maybe you could share, you're the superstar on this, maybe you could share with the audience exactly what's their life cycle. How do they start, and then where do they go?
Sure. So one thing, as you mentioned, there is a 2-year life cycle, which means that tick populations are much more stable than mosquitoes, which only last a couple of weeks. So, you know, a good storm can wipe out mosquitoes. The ticks are just simply there because of that long life cycle they have. And so basically what happens is that let's talk about deer ticks, which cause Lyme disease, which are probably of the most concern. So what would happen is that the adults mate on deer. And so the female is going to lay eggs. Those eggs hatch into nymphs. The nymphs then survive throughout the first year over winter. They molt into, The larvae molt into nymphs the following year. The nymphs then are infected because the larvae, when they feed on, let's say, mice, are going to get infected because mice are the primary hosts for, let's say, Lyme disease. And so what happens then is the nymphs then take a blood meal, and if they're infected at this point, so if the nymph bites you, you get infected. They then molt into adults, and the adults then mate on deer, and then the whole cycle starts over again.
And do you have some ticks to show us? Because everyone's amazed at the size, and I'm always amazed at how small they are. If you're looking at somebody, how do you find one of these things?
Yeah, so I do have some ticks, and I will put them up to my forehead just so you can get an idea about how big they are. And so I'm going to put them up here. Now, so hopefully you can see them there.
Sure, we can see them.
I can move in a little bit. And so the larvae here, I mean, the eggs here, you basically can't see. They're so small. And the larva here is, that's a larva. And then you've got the nymphs and then the adults. And so the adults are the ones of most concern. And you can see how they're basically the size of a poppy seed. Right. And so what happens is when one of these ticks attaches to you, ticks generally go up. They like to go up. So let's say if you get one on your lower leg, they will migrate up on your body, and they'll tend to attach in places where you may not even see them, like the back of your knees, your armpits, often in your groin.
Because it's warm? Is it because of the temperature? Is that why?
Ticks like to go up. So they're kind of programmed to go up. And partially this is a biologic thing, because the way ticks generally what we call questing, where they're looking for a blood meal, what they'll do is they'll find, let's say, a blade of grass, and their natural behavior is to go up. So they'll go up to the top of the blade of grass and just stay there with their legs out, waiting for you to come by, and then they're going to latch onto you. And because their behavior is generally, let's go up, they will go up on your body until they find a really nice place to hang out and attach to you.
So as long as we're on the subject of them being attached to us, And I was talking about how we look for them. How do we get them off? So I was always taught that you need to use a tweezers and do it the proper way and pull it the right way. Maybe you could share with everyone exactly what we need to do to get rid of that tick once we find it.
Well, first, I want to emphasize, you can take them off yourself. You do not need to go to the emergency room. We know that thousands of people go to the emergency room every year because they have an attached tick. You don't need to do that. You can run up a big bill and waste a lot of time when you can just do this yourself. Now, what people say is just the traditional thing is take a pair of tweezers, grab the tick and slowly pull it out. And until it comes out. But one thing I want to emphasize is you don't need tweezers. You can actually do this with your fingers. And the key is grab the tick and just gently pull it out. And you don't want to yank it out. You don't want to smash it. You don't want to put gasoline on it because you don't want to make the tick angry, because if it gets angry, it may put more saliva in your skin, which may make you more likely to get infected. So if you just kind of grab it and pull it out slowly, that's all you need to do. And your skin may tint a little bit, but just keep pulling out gently and it will come out. And if there is maybe generally there won't be any body parts left in your skin. If there is, they will just come out on their own.
And I know that on some, like those that cause PWAS and some of the others, just a short period of time on your body could be serious, 15 minutes. But with deer ticks, how long can they last? Because someone may say, oh, I forgot to check my kid yesterday, and now it's been a day or 2 days. And I was always taught that you can go for 2 days with a tick on you. But is that correct?
The tick will stay on you for a while. But the important thing is to try and get the tick off. Find the ticks and get them off your body as soon as possible. Because some of the diseases that are spread by these ticks, you can get infected really quickly. Other ones like Lyme disease, the tick has got to be on you for a couple of days before you get infected. So it's really important that after you've been out in the woods at times when ticks are active, get home, take a shower, look for ticks and take them off your body, because sometimes they won't even be attached. So you can take them off before they attach to you. They'll maybe be crawling around on you. But you want to get them off your body before they infect you. And particularly look for places that are hard to see, like the back of the knees, your groin, maybe around your scalp, your neck, places on your armpits, places like that, which you may not be normally looking for, poppy seed sized ticks.
We always think about Lyme disease, but there's anaplasmosis, there's ehrlichiosis, right? There's babesiosis. There are all these other diseases. And I remember when I was the health commissioner, there was PWASIN. We actually had someone who died from PWASIN because it affected the brain. It's rare, but we had a case in New York State, and there are cases in other states as well. Tell us a little bit, we'll get back to Lyme disease in a second, but tell us a little bit about these other diseases that can occur and what the concerns are and how the public should be thinking about that as well.
Yeah, so there are about 8 ticks that cause most tick-borne diseases in the United States. So, and each of these ticks tends to live in different parts of the country. So, for example, deer ticks that spread Lyme disease and anaplasmosis, for example, and about 4 other diseases as well, they're primarily up in the upper Midwest and the Northeast, although that they're spreading rather dramatically in recent years. Other ticks like the Lone Star tick, which can cause the alpha-gal syndrome or ehrlichiosis, is present mainly in the Southeast. There are also Ixodes pacificus ticks, or the Pacific Coast tick, which can spread Lyme disease on the West Coast. So just depends where you live, what are the problems. But the main diseases we really worry about is Lyme disease, which is just growing dramatically. There's about 470,000 people every year diagnosed with Lyme disease. But there's also ehrlichiosis, which I mentioned is in the southeast, which is really a pretty severe disease. You can actually die from it if it's not treated. Anaplasmosis, which is another disease spread by deer ticks up in the northeast and upper Midwest. And there's a whole, other ones that are really concerning are like Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which is a very horrible, life-threatening illness.
Which is not in the Rocky Mountains. It's in the south.
Yeah, that was discovered in the Rocky Mountains, so it's called Rocky Mountain spotted fever. But actually, most cases of Rocky Mountain spotted fever are actually east of the Mississippi River. So there's just a whole slew of these diseases. And I think the major point is, if you've been out in a place, particularly in the summer when ticks are, spring and summer and fall when ticks are active, you know, and you start to get sick, you get fever, chills, muscle pain, headaches, whatever, go see a doctor, because particularly if you've noticed that you've been bitten by a tick, but even if you haven't, because it's hard to find these ticks on your body sometimes.
You mentioned the alpha-gal syndrome, which is fascinating because that's the one that gives you an allergy to red meat. How does that happen? How do you end up with an allergy as a result of a tick bite, which is rare, but if you have it, that's going to be a concern.
Yeah, this is actually one of the craziest stories, you know, I think I've encountered in my days working on vector-borne diseases. And basically what happens is that all mammals have this sugar in them, which is called it, we'll just call it alpha-gal for short. And so all mammals have this, but people and great apes do not. And so what happens is if for some reason, which we don't fully understand, that certain ticks, particularly the Lone Star tick, which is located mainly in the southeast, bites you, that tick saliva also contains this alpha-gal sugar. And after it bites you, it sensitizes you to alpha-gal. So you normally don't have it, but if you're eating meat, for some reason, some people who eat meat, which does contain the sugar, like beef and pork, they get sensitized to it. So you develop an allergy to red meat, basically. And this is horrible because people live with this for really sometimes for years, and they can't figure out what's going on. They either get kind of this indigestion or like stomach symptoms, or they get what's called anaphylaxis. They get a severe allergic reaction after eating meat. But unlike most allergies where you get exposed, you know, and then you develop an allergy, you know, symptoms pretty quickly. With alpha-gal syndrome, people, for some reason, after eating meat, don't get the symptoms for like 5 or 6 hours later. So they don't put it together with eating meat and getting these symptoms. So somebody may eat, the classic is somebody eats dinner and then starts to get like hives and difficulty breathing and an allergic reaction like at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so nobody connects these two. So for a long time, people, until we really started alerting physicians that what was going on with this, that people didn't put two and two together. So they would continue eating meat, continue getting these symptoms, continuing going to the emergency room, and until somebody finally figured out what was going on.
How did they figure this out? I guess someone must have looked and sort of realized that they had a tick bite and thought about it. I mean, it's a pretty amazing story to think that this is someone put those two, you know, piece facts together.
Yeah, well, it was how it happened, how people put it together was just crazy. Because what happened was there was conference for oncologists or people that were treating cancer. And so at this conference, people were talking, like, and some people were saying, well, there was a particular therapy, antibody therapy, that people were getting. And some of the physicians were saying, God, my patients are having a horrible reaction to this. And other physicians were saying, well, we don't have this problem. And when they got talking together, they realized there was only people in certain parts of the country were having this problem. And so somebody looked on the CDC website and saw that our tick map overlapped for this one particular tick, the Lone Star tick, overlapped with where these patients were having symptoms. Then they went back and started finding out that many of these patients had previous tick bites, but also this antibody treatment that people were getting had alpha gal in it. And got so it. That's how it became, that's how people put it two and two together. It's crazy.
Well, more power to the CDC website and the information you can find there. Could we go talk a little bit about Lyme disease, because everyone is concerned about it, and everyone's concerned about those who develop sort of chronic Lyme. Can you talk a little bit about how frequent is that, and a little bit about what people should be doing to manage those kind of problems that they may have?
Yeah, so Lyme disease is going up and up and up and up as far as the incidence goes. And actually, when I started my career at the CDC decades ago, my first job, I was stationed in Connecticut. And I wrote this paper, finding there was like 1,000 cases of Lyme disease in Connecticut over several years. And it looked like it was spreading beyond Lyme, Connecticut. Lyme is a town in Connecticut. And now, decades later, it's just basically blanketed the whole Northeast, the upper Midwest, and it's spreading into Canada, going further south. So the spread of this has just been dramatic. And along with this dramatic spread and an explosion of ticks, we have an explosion of Lyme disease. And right now we estimate there's about 476,000 people every year in the United States that are diagnosed and treated for Lyme disease.
Amazing, amazing. And one of the things I think also important is that if you have a tick bite, you worry you have Lyme disease, you shouldn't be tested right then, because it's a period of time that you need before you're going to find out if you have a positive test. So I think that's an important point. Right? If you get a tick bite today, going in for a Lyme test tomorrow is not the answer. Really, you have to give it a little bit of time. But maybe you can correct me on that if I'm wrong on that. But that's how
you're totally right. What we recommend is that if you go to a physician, the physician thinks you might have Lyme disease, just get treated. Don't wait for a test, because for most people who have Lyme disease, the thing they get first is a skin rash. And oftentimes it's what's called a bullseye rash. It looks like a ring, but some of the rashes are actually atypical looking. So if you get a rash, you maybe have been exposed to a tick. If you've been out in the woods or out in your yard or whatever, at the time when ticks are active, we just recommend getting treated, because the treatment is pretty simple. It's just a course of doxycycline. And because what you don't want to wait is for a test, because the Lyme disease tests are often negative early in the course of the disease. And you don't want to go on to more severe symptoms like the neurologic problems or the arthritis or other symptoms that you can get with Lyme disease if left untreated. So the bottom line is, for most of these tick-borne disease, we're telling physicians, if you suspect this is happening, just treat it, because the treatment is simple, straightforward, and can prevent further complications.
Straightforward. Antibiotic and take care of the problem up front. Back to sort of the basic environment, a lot of people have cats and dogs, and in the summer, the dogs out there running around. I understand that dogs can get tick bites and infected from that, but also they, I guess they could bring it back into the house. So talk a little bit about maybe with us about pets and what's the risk to the pet and also basically the risks to humans who are, have the pets around.
Yeah. So first of all, as a disclaimer, I'm not a veterinarian, right. Certainly pets, particularly dogs and cats, but we hear a lot about dogs getting ticks because they're running around, you know, and so ticks are attached to the dog, and oftentimes it's very hard to figure out exactly where, you know, to find these ticks on a dog because the ticks, I mean, the dog's hairy, right? And so dogs can get Lyme disease as well. And so, you know, it is a veterinary issue for sure. And so people, you know, if you've been out, try and find the ticks on your dogs because you want to get them off.
Got it. So, which is a little hard, obviously, as you mentioned. We are always looking at new therapies and vaccines. And I understand that there's some efforts out there, and Yale was working on sort of an anti-tick vaccine, and Pfizer was working on a vaccine. What is the latest, and that's just from my own readings, but what is the latest on getting a vaccine to prevent people from getting Lyme disease, or just in general, a way to prevent the tick from infecting people through a vaccine, through the use of a vaccine? What have you heard about that?
Yeah, there was a Lyme disease vaccine roughly on the market maybe 25 years ago or so. And that vaccine was eventually taken off the market. There was some concern that the vaccine had some adverse events associated with it, which turned out in the long run not to be true. But people are afraid of the vaccine. And at that time, Lyme disease wasn't that great of a problem like it is right now. And so right now, there is a phase 3 clinical trial going on for a new Lyme disease vaccine. It's based similar to the one 25 years ago with some modifications to improve it. And so that vaccine is undergoing clinical trials right now. And it'll be probably 2 to 3 years before that vaccine is available for the public.
So we have a little bit of time, but hopefully that will be an opportunity to to lower the incidence of the disease. Can you just get Lyme disease from ticks, or are there other ways to get Lyme disease as well?
Ticks are it.
Ticks are it?
Yeah.
and deer, the deer tick, obviously the black leg, right, the black-legged tick. But what other animals, I mean, we always think about deer, but what other animals can carry, you know, Lyme disease or ticks, I should say, I gather birds can, or what else is out there besides the deer?
Yeah, well, one thing that's really interesting is that deer actually, although the ticks mate on the deer don't get infected, which is really odd. The deer is basically I tell people, deer is kind of like a walking bordello for these ticks because they feed on the deer and they also mate on the deer. But deer really aren't the main culprits here. It's really small animals like mice, that the white-footed mouse in particular, which are the main hosts of Lyme disease. Once these mice get infected, they stay infected for a long time. They develop a lot of bacteria in their blood, and then all the ticks that bite them basically are going to get infected. And then, so the ticks get infected from the mice, and then mainly larval ticks, and then they molt into the nymphs, and the nymphs are then already infected, and then they're going to go bite you and get you infected.
It's sort of the whole ecosystem working together on this, the deer, the mice, the ticks, and then us as humans being right there. To protect us, everyone says to spray repellent on. Is that the best answer for kids, for everyone who are going out this summer? Is that what we should be pushing?
Yeah, so there's a few things you can do. Repellents are our mainstay. We don't have a vaccine, so we want people to get out and enjoy the outdoors. So the best thing to do is try and protect yourself. And the mainstay is repellents. And there's a number of repellents out there right now. There's like five or six that we recommend. The mainstay that's been around for years is DEET. And the important thing about DEET is, number one, is you can use it in people 2 months of age or greater. And although there's kind of bad press out there about DEET, you know, and safety, it turns out that DEET is actually one of the safest things you can put on your body. The thing about DEET is the higher the concentration of DEET, the longer it acts. So 30% DEET will last maybe 10 hours. 10% DEET will add a couple hours. But the efficacy is the same. But once you get above 30% DEET, there's really no added benefit. So we tell people, use a higher concentration up to about 30% if you're out longer, but if you're out shorter periods of time, you can use a lower percent. Now, DEET has some issues, it does attack plastic, for example. And many people find it kind of oily and unpleasant to use, although the formulations now are much better than they used to be. But there's a number of alternatives. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. No, go ahead. Go ahead. What are the alternatives? I'm curious.
So there's a number of alternatives. A lot of people are using a compound called picaridin, which can also be used in people 2 months of age and older. And picaridin is nicer and it has a nicer feel. It's less oily on your skin, for example. But there's also a whole bunch of others. There's IR3535. There's oil of lemon eucalyptus. There's 2-undecanone. There's paramethylene diol. These are all ones that have been tested and recommended by EPA.
I'm glad they're tested because I always am fascinated by this. As an anesthesiologist, we used to put anesthesia patches on people, lidocaine patches to control pain, and it gets absorbed by the skin. People put nitro patches on for those who have heart disease, gets absorbed by the skin. So I always wonder, when we put all of this stuff on the skin, how do we know it's not getting absorbed by the skin and having any systemic of total body effects? But I guess it's been studied.
All of these, the ones that I've just mentioned, have been extensively studied and proven safe.
Right.
And I think the important thing here is, although that's kind of a long laundry list of compounds that you could have been EPA approved, there are alternatives. You've got a choice now of which ones you want to use. Now, what I'm concerned about is there's a lot of products that are sort of marketed as natural or whatever, but are not proven to be safe or effective. And so I would really stick with the ones that I've mentioned. You can find the list on our website, on the CDC website, on EPA's website, to find which ones you should be using. But I would not use one that claims to be natural, that has been basically untested, because it may not work. And if it doesn't work, you're susceptible to getting tick bites and getting infected with awful things, awful diseases. In addition to the repellents, I also recommend permethrin. You can put that on your clothes, or you can buy clothing that has been impregnated at the factory with permethrin. I use this when I go backpacking or camping in particular, and it works really well. So permethrin, if you treat your clothes or buy permethrin treated clothing, and you can put it on your backpack or wherever, and that will help protect you as well. And I found that even when I backpack in really buggy areas, that the combination of putting on a repellent along with permethrin on my backpack and in clothes really keeps me pretty bug free. the advantage of all of this is it not only protects you against ticks, but it also protects you against mosquitoes as well. Another thing that we recommend doing is wearing long sleeves and long pants. That will help keep mosquitoes and ticks off your body. But obviously, you know, if it's 100 degrees outside, you know, long sleeves and long pants are, a lot of people aren't going to do that.
But well, that's what it is here in New York. Sorry, go ahead.
So when we go out collecting for ticks as part of, you know, studies and surveillance, this is what we do because, you know, we just want to do everything to keep ticks off of our body.
Well, it's 100 degrees up here in New York, and and there was a tick. Apparently, there's a Fordham tick index, which they said 10 out of 10, which means that the chance of getting a tick if you're out there in the woods is high this particular week. But I was wondering if you can give us three takeaways, things that we should be focused on regarding ticks.
Yeah, so I think my first takeaway is these ticks are increasing. They're increasing in frequency, they're increasing in geographic distribution, and you need to be really vigilant about protecting yourself against tick bites. During the spring, the summer, and early fall when these ticks are active. And the best way to do that is to use an EPA-approved repellent. Now, one thing I didn't mention previously is that if you put on sunscreen and repellent, I don't recommend using a combination because they have different lengths of time that they work. Put on the sunscreen first and then put on the repellent second. So that's the first thing. The second thing is if you're outside in an area where ticks may be active, after you get home, do a tick check. Take a shower if you can, to take all of the, get the ticks off your body or to find them, and remove any ticks that you have as soon as you can. And you don't need special tools, just grab them and just gently pull them out. Whatever you do, don't put gasoline or any other thing on it, folk remedies, that's not gonna work. And the last thing is, if you're out where ticks have been active and you get sick, go see a doctor. You may have a tick-borne illness, you may have something else. Just because you haven't seen a tick on your body doesn't mean you don't have a tick-borne illness. Because as we've shown, these ticks are really, really hard to find. So the faster you get treated, the better. So those are my three points.
Those are great points, and we're going to make sure the audience and our subscribers hear them, and we will put them out there. And I, when you showed us that tick earlier, yeah, it is really small, as we've seen. It's very easy to miss that. We've reached the point in our show now where we turn to our most important guests, which are our subscribers. And I know there are going to be questions out there. I always mention at this point that the information you're hearing from the podcast is for informational purposes, and you should speak with your doctor about any medical condition, particularly since they know your medical history. So call your doctor if there's a problem that you're having. But let's turn to our subscribers. Kat, who do we have up there, or are you the first on the list today?
Well, I'm the first on the list today. but so I know you said that you you're not a vet and you can get ticks from your dogs and all that. And my original question was going to be about ticks and pets because I have two dogs and my dad actually got a tick from taking one of the dogs out literally like 3 weeks ago. But you answered my question on that one. But I was then wondering if tick-borne illnesses sort of affect groups differently. So like if a kid or an adult or an older adult gets a tick-borne illness, whether those impact people differently or if they have other conditions. I was just curious your thoughts on that.
No, absolutely. And that's a great question. For one thing is for Lyme disease, we find the more advanced manifestations of Lyme disease later. in younger children and older adults, for example. And so also with alpha-gal syndrome, we find that the people who have a previous history of allergies to other things, you know, allergic kind of person, is more likely to get alpha-gal syndrome after getting bitten by a tick. So they definitely affect different people in different ways.
Copy that. I am now going to bring up Mr. James, who has a question for you guys.
Hi, Dr. Peterson. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. It's been really informative. I've learned many things about Lyme disease and ticks that I hadn't known before. My question for you today is, why did you decide to study ticks in the first place?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. It was kind of by accident, actually. When I joined CDC, I'm a physician, and most physicians who join CDC join something called the Epidemic Intelligence Service. And you get assigned to a place for your first 2 years. And I happened to get assigned to Connecticut, where Lyme, Connecticut is. And so at the time, this whole Lyme disease thing was kind of emerging there. And so I ended up studying Lyme disease and how it was spreading and who was getting it and that kind of thing. And that started my quest on vector-borne diseases and studying diseases of ticks and mosquitoes and fleas. And it's just a fascinating area to work in because it kind of combines, you know, human medicine, some veterinary medicine, some basic biology. And ecology, it's really a fascinating area to work and an important one because all these diseases are increasing. Hmm.
Gotcha. Thank you.
It's always amazing how little twists and turns in our career end up putting us down a path which ends up changing, you know, our entire life. Kat, who else do we have up there?
So I'm actually just going to ask this question. I wanted to get them to come on camera, but one of the subscribers in the chat was asking, what's the best way to learn how to treat tick-borne diseases or become ILADS certified?
I'm not quite sure what ILAD 86 certified is, but the one thing about most of these tick-borne diseases, the ones that are caused by bacteria anyway, which is most of them, are very treatable, most of which by just simple treatment with doxycycline. It will treat anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Lyme disease, some of the biggies. Some of the others, babesiosis, which is a parasitic disease, requires a different kind of antibiotic. But most of them are very treatable, particularly if caught early.
Fantastic. Thank you. I hope that answers Ms. Emma's question. Dr. Z, that is all the questions that I see that have come through in the chat.
Excellent. You know, it's interesting. You're traveling, you're working in Connecticut, and I've traveled up back and forth through Connecticut, having lived there and in Boston. Anytime I drive by the sign that says Lyme, just like when I used to drive up to Albany, the sign said Coxsackie, which is another, infectious disease. I always say it's amazing how these towns, the thing was found there, but people associate that area with that particular disease. And I'm sure Lyme, Connecticut, has just international reputation for having been where that started, where we learned about it, I should say, not necessarily started.
I'm not sure most towns kind of want that distinction.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Last thing I want to do. That's why I said maybe Coxsackie, New York feels the same way. We really don't want our town associated with a problem like that. But it's just.
I was traveling. It was a funny story with that. I was traveling in Uganda and crossed the Nile there. And across the bridge there's a sign that says, Welcome to West Nile.
West Nile.
So there's a West Nile district in Uganda. And so I took a picture of it and then got promptly arrested.
For taking a picture of the sign?
Yeah, because they did not want you taking pictures of the bridge for some reason crossing.
Oh, my. But the sign, I guess the sign was all right. The bridge was not so great.
Yeah.
But you know, Ebola, that's a region, right? Right. You know, all these different areas, yeah. The river, right? It's all different places in the world where people associate diseases with them. Well, you know, this has been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your sharing with us about ticks, about what to do to protect ourselves, and in general, the reason why there are more tick-borne illnesses out there right now. And it's never, we can never know enough about certain diseases, particularly those that affect us when we want to go out in the summer and many other times of the year as well. But the whole purpose of the podcast really is to provide our audience, our viewers, with information about health. And so, Dr. Peterson, you have really provided us with very valuable information about ticks. So I want to thank you for that, very much so. And I'm sure those who will listen will be glad to hear about the risks that ticks form can cause to us and how we can protect ourselves. Well, that is it for our show today. The next time on Docology, we're going to hear about a national health security from Dr. Ken Bernard. He is a retired Rear Admiral in the United States Public Health Service. He served as the special assistant to the president on biosecurity for both President Bill Clinton and also for President George W. Bush. And he also was an advisor to the World Health Organization and a health advisor to ambassadors, cabinet secretaries, and senators. So we will look forward to hearing a little bit more about national health security. But remember, if you are a Docology subscriber, you can join the conversation. You just have to sign up for the email reminders about upcoming episodes. Just go to docology.life or to Substack. But tune in next time, because the topic we cover may just save your life.
Docology is a production of Hang Media. Our producer is Catherine Warren. Ronnie Selig is editorial advisor. Our creative director is Anna Richard. Janine Wilson of Wilson Media Group handles paid marketing. Our publicists are Leslie Ann Wade and Jerry Caracoli. Theme music was composed by Nick Kitts. Subscribe and join our community at docology.life. Until next time, move, wash your hands, and stay healthy.